What time is it? It's time for the Personal Computer Show. Today's July 1st, 2020. It's the start of spring training for all Major League Baseball teams. They're going to play a baseball season in virtual mode. It's not like baseball the way it ought to be played. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Do you know who has your personal data? Do you know how Facebook, Google, Amazon, and other big tech companies are using your personal data? Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the programs available on prn.fm on the Internet as well as pcradioshow.org. To listen to the live program on the telephone each Wednesday, it's 6 p.m. Eastern Time and the number is 641-793-7091. You can leave me a message with your question or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Last week, Apple opened its Worldwide Developers Conference with a preview of its upcoming operating system and software features for iPhones, iPads, Watch, TV, AirPods, and Macs. In a major move, the company also announced its plan to shift its Mac computers to ARM-based Apple Silicon from Intel processors. There were an assortment of announcements on iOS 14 to iPad OS 14, Mac OS Big Sur, and Watch OS. You can't opt in or opt out of app tracking. That may soon change, Apple said, that beginning this fall with its next mobile operating system, iOS 14, it will require so-called third-party apps to ask for your permission to track you. Apple will also give iPhone and iPad users more control over how their location is shared instead of sharing your precise location with an app. You will be able to share your approximate location, giving a developer a rough idea of where you are, and that could be helpful if you're using a news app. For example, you want to see articles about your hometown but don't want to share precisely where you live. The Mac's transition to Apple Silicon is a major announcement that might set the future direction for Apple Mac computers. After shifting to Intel chips in 2006, the company is now ready to power its Mac computers with its own ARM-based chips. The rule of thumb is RISC processors, which is based on ARM, require twice the memory over complex instruction CPUs. Are they any faster? It's a question of how you line up the processors for comparison based on price. The transition to Apple's chips on the Mac is expected to take 2 years. If you buy a Mac in 2022, it should have the horsepower of an iPad, but work with a mouse and keyboard. Apple said the next version of the Apple Watch operating system, Watch OS 7, would take advantage of the watch's motion sensors to detect when you are washing your hands and start a 20-second timer to ensure you scrub thoroughly. The watch will also use its sensors to track sleep patterns. Big Brother's not watching you. In reality, you're giving Big Brother all the information with almost no effort on their part. With the changeover in chip architecture, the Mac OS Big Sur is the upcoming operating system for Apple's Mac series computers and laptops. To take advantage of the new architecture, Mac users will have the opportunity to replace not only the computer, but also the complement of software applications. This is what I call planned obsolescence given a little push. The Mac's transition to Apple Silicon is a major announcement that might set the future direction for Apple Mac computers. After shifting to Intel chips in 2006, the company is now ready to power its Mac computers with its own ARM chips, and in a keynote address, Apple previewed a Mac powered by Apple A12Z Bionic chip. The early look reveals that Mac on ARM chips is ready to replace the Intel-powered Macs. Apple has optimized all its native apps, including Motion and Final Cut Pro X. The company has also been working with Microsoft and Adobe and their key software like Microsoft Office productivity apps and Adobe Creative apps have already been optimized to work on Mac powered by ARM chips. The move to Apple Silicon will start with new Macs to be released later this year, and the entire transition will take 2 years. The Mac OS Big Sur is the upcoming operating system for Apple's Mac series of computers and laptops. The OS will bring redesigned interface and introduce new features such as Control Center for easy access to key settings and Notification Center with access to widgets and more. The OS is seen as the company's first step towards Mac's transition to Apple Silicon. Therefore, it brings some iPhone apps to the Mac. These include Messages and Maps apps. Apple has added new functionality to both these apps on the iPhone upcoming iOS 14 operating system, and Macs will get the same functionality too. Besides, Apple is also making some improvement to its native Safari browser. These include extension support, translation support, and redesigned home windows with custom wallpaper support. iOS 14 for iPhones will bring a redesigned home screen with a new app library, which includes automatically organized app folders. The OS will feature new customizable app widgets. The OS will introduce, get this, picture-in-picture, which will allow users to continue watching videos in a small Windows frame while multitasking. If you think the screen now is too small, then picture-in-picture should really bolster your complaint. Apple's digital assistant Siri is also getting new interface in the iOS 14. Some say that they're starting to look more like an Android operating system. Messages is another feature. It will allow conversations to be pinned on top for quick and easy access. Apple also introduced App Clips, which seems to be Apple's alternative to Android's progressive web apps. The App Clips does not require app downloads and gets the basic app's functions quickly. Apple introduced the iPad OS last year with the aim to bring an independent operating system optimized for the company's big screen devices. The iPad OS 14 will get most of the features that are coming to iPhones with iOS 14. Microsoft last Friday announced it will permanently close its 83 Microsoft Store retail locations. In the past decade or so, Microsoft began to expand its retail presence in an effort to create a shopping experience similar to that of Apple's. Microsoft said the closing of its physical locations will result in a pre-tax charge of approximately $450 million, or 5 cents a share. Hey, that comes out to almost $500 million, which it will record in the current quarter that ends June the 30th. Microsoft announced that it will permanently close its 83 Microsoft Store retail locations, and it will instead focus on its online store at Microsoft.com, where customers can go for support, sales, training, and more. Microsoft said its retail team members will help on the website instead of in-store. A Microsoft spokesperson said that all employees will have the opportunity to stay with the company. They said their sales have grown online as their product portfolio have evolved to largely digital offerings, and that their talented team has proven success serving customers beyond any physical location. Microsoft also said that they were grateful to their Microsoft Store customers, and they look forward to continuing to serve them online and with their retail sales team at the Microsoft corporate locations. In the past decade or so, Microsoft began to expand its retail presence in an effort to create a shopping experience similar to Apple's, where people could go to try new Microsoft software and hardware created by both Microsoft and its partners. Microsoft even built a store on Fifth Avenue in New York City, just blocks away from Apple's iconic Glass Cube store. The decision seems to be made after Microsoft decided to temporarily close stores in March due to the spread of the coronavirus. The charge includes primarily asset write-offs and impairments. Microsoft will continue to invest in its digital storefronts on Microsoft.com and stores in Xbox and Windows, reaching more than 1.2 billion people every month in 190 markets. The company will also reimagine spaces that serve all customers, including operating Microsoft Experience Centers in London, New York City, Sydney, and Redmond campus locations. I had been railing that Microsoft's most recent updates for Windows 10 has been a major screw-up, and it is a disaster. Well, Microsoft has now tacitly acknowledged that some of the Windows 10's most recent updates are causing rather serious problems for some PCs. According to the company, KB455-7957 and KB456-0960 updates, which are supposed to be cumulative updates that bring numerous security fixes to Windows 10, are instead encountering a critical issue with a local security authority process. This has led to some computers to randomly reboot with just a "your PC will automatically restart in 1 minute" message as a warning. This can be incredibly frustrating as it means you have to quickly save any work you've got open. Not only is it disruptive, but it could also lead to loss of data as well if you don't save in time. The good news, if there's good news at all, is that this issue, though serious, doesn't seem to be afflicting many PCs. Microsoft is also aware of the issue, which has updated KB456-0960 documentation to warn about the issue, stating that the Local Security Authority Subsystem Service, that's the LSASS file, the program is sass.exe, might fail on some devices, and that users may encounter an error message that says a critical system process failed with a status code of C00000008. The machine must now be restarted. While it's good that Microsoft has now acknowledged this problem, there isn't an official fix at the moment. I've been saying that last week, they don't have a fix with many problems. With the documentation just saying that Microsoft is working on a resolution and will provide an update in an upcoming release. Anyone suffering from this problem will be hoping that that resolution comes soon. Having a PC needing to reboot at random times is incredibly frustrating and could end up making the machine unusable. One way to avoid this could be to try to uninstall either KB455-7957 or KB456-0960 updates, depending on what you've installed. I have a better idea. Why not just roll it back to a prior upgrade? Microsoft, you should pull back this upgrade if you have problems of such magnitude. This is not the way to roll out an upgrade. Sometimes you'll gain much more credibility that if you have a problem, just say, "We have a problem. We're going to pull back on it. We'll fix it," instead of saying, "We have a problem. We will plow through it while you still have the upgrades." What a way to run a shop. Originally, Amazon had negotiated with New York City about creating a new headquarters in New York City, and it would have created many high-end tech jobs. Well, due to politics, it got killed. So what do you think happened? Amazon is coming back into the city. But instead of high-tech jobs, you could tell by the amount of space that they're getting that they are putting in low-end jobs. Amazon sealed a deal with the Queens Warehouse at 55-15 Grand Avenue in Queens, which used to be a papermaking factory. It's reported that Amazon has inked a deal to lease 1 million square feet of warehouse space in Queens, giving it the largest private sector storage and distribution network in New York City. And they said they were excited to increase their investment in New York City area with new delivery station that will provide fast and efficient deliveries and create hundreds of job opportunities for the local workforce. The total square footage includes a multi-level parking structure. The actual delivery station is approximately 250,000 square feet. The space at 55-15 Grand Avenue is a former paper-making factory. Separately, Amazon is negotiating to lease 620,000 square feet office and warehouse space in Red Hook, Brooklyn, that's under construction. And it also is laying claim to 200,000 square feet warehouse in the South Bronx. The retailer already leases 450,000 square feet in Staten Island next door to its 855,000 square feet distribution center. So instead of selecting and succeeding in getting New York City to be a headquarters, we have a lot of warehouse storage space and for distribution, and we should have a whole lot of low-end jobs available instead of high-end jobs. That was a miscalculation by our city fathers. Google announced it will automatically delete your location history by default. Well, the news item headline did not match the news content. In this case, the Google location history report really hasn't been deleted at the outset. Google will start to automatically delete users' location history and web activity after 18 months. Previously, users had to turn this setting on if they didn't want Google to store their data for an indefinite amount of time. The move allows Google to still hold on to the information and recommend things you might like based on your previous location or browsing history, but it won't have years and years worth of private data. Google location history tracking is still off by default, but turning it on can be useful if you want products like Google Maps to offer personalized recommendations, like restaurants you might like, based on where you've been in the past, or Google might know from your location history that you typically leave for work at a certain hour and can recommend that you leave a bit earlier or later to avoid traffic on a particular day. When location tracking is on, however, Google follows your location with precise detail, something you can see if you view your Google Maps timeline. Now, if you turn location history on, Google will auto-delete that data after 18 months. You can also set Google location history to automatically delete every 3 months or every 36 months. Web and app activity will also be deleted automatically every 18 months, but only for new accounts. New YouTube accounts also will have their history deleted after 3 years. Web and app activity tracking and YouTube history is logged by default for an indefinite period of time for existing users. But you can turn on web and app activity auto-delete, which rolled out last year, through the Google Activity Controls page. Their objective is to continue to challenge themselves to do more with less, and they are now changing their data retention practices to make auto-delete the default for their core activity settings. Google is making it easier to access incognito mode on select apps, the mode that lets you browse or use apps privately, and Google won't save your browsing history, cookies, or site data. In Google Maps, Google won't keep a history of where you've been when you have incognito mode on. A feature rolling out to iPhone and later for Android and other apps will let users press on their profile picture in Google Search, Maps, and YouTube to turn on incognito mode. Google said it would soon make it possible to stay in incognito mode across its family of apps, so you'll have to turn it on in each individual app. Google said it would also offer more proactive privacy controls and help guide users through managing their privacy settings. Additionally, users will be able to access key Google account controls through search. Net-net, or as what they say, the bottom line is, Google has at minimum 90 days of location tracking data. It's 18 months by default. If you insist, Google can and will keep your location data for 36 months or 3 years. The location history is not confined to the United States. It's worldwide, the shops you visited and the restaurants where you dine in some foreign country. I just hope we never get to the stage of that movie, The Minority Report, where Big Brother knows what I'm thinking before anything happens. After 84 years, Olympus is exiting the camera business. The company's imaging business is being sold off to investment fund Japan Industrial Partners, that's JIP, which also acquired the VAIO, that's a V-A-I-O brand from Sony back in 2014. The VAIO was a laptop company. Japanese manufacturer Olympus Corporation has announced that it will exit the camera business through the sale of its imaging business. The news isn't terribly surprising, as camera sales are indeed down worldwide. Back in November of 2019, rumors surfaced that Olympus was planning to entirely exit the camera business, something the company denied, stating instead that it was working on improving the profitability and efficiency of both its imaging and scientific equipment businesses. It's unclear how great of an impact the economic downturn was caused by COVID-19 pandemic had on this drop in sales volume, but it seems unlikely that camera companies can expect a spike in sales at any point in the near future, given the fact that Olympus imaging business was already struggling to survive. It makes sense that the company would choose this time to exit the camera market entirely. The decision is mostly based on low camera sales volume. Olympus will continue to sell medical and scientific equipment. Olympus has existed as a company since 1919, but its imaging business started in 1936 with a sale of a camera using the Zuiko photographic lens. That was a very fine lens. The company's innovative pen camera series then launched in 1959, and the Olympus brand went on to become a household name associated with film and digital cameras. Olympus film and digital cameras were well made. I still have a few of them in my collection of cameras of the past. However, smartphones happened and Olympus hasn't been immune to the squeeze that placed on camera manufacturers. Now it's admitting defeat and moving on. Olympus posted a signed memorandum of understanding that details an intent to sell its imaging business to the investment fund Japan Industrial Partners, that's JIP, where it will form a new company. JIP will likely be known to people for acquiring VAIO business brand from Sony back in 2014. New VAIO laptops have been launched in recent years, and it looks as though JIP intends to do the same with Olympus cameras, although under what name is unknown. A legally binding agreement between the two companies will be signed by September 30th. The decision to sell is explained in a memorandum, and the company explaining Olympus has implemented measures to cope with the extremely severe digital camera market due to, amongst others, rapid market shrink caused by the evolution of smartphones. Olympus has improved the cost structure by restructuring the manufacturing bases and focusing on high-value-added interchangeable lens, aiming to rectify the earning structure to those that may continue generating profit even as sales dwindles. Despite all such efforts, Olympus imaging business recording operating losses for 3 consecutive fiscal years up to the term ending in March 2020. I'm going to miss those Olympus cameras. Having used Olympus cameras, I think we're going to lose a very fine company. Presenting Benjamin Rockwell with his continuing IT Pro Series, a most timely subject this week, as there have been a number of published articles on pros and cons on the subject of fighting loneliness while working from home.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now is where I put on my business suit and my tie. Okay, maybe not actually literally, but this is where I give you some tidbits. And I leverage my 30 years of experience as an IT professional, of being a computer nerd, to really tell you what's going on in my mind. All right, so I mean, we're taking a little bit of a detour this week because the whole topic this time is, how does one fight loneliness while working from home? I'm going to start off by pointing out that as a part of my persona, and when I say persona, it's something that I've always played this up because I've always been a computer nerd. That's right. I'm a nerd. I play this up in conversation. I play this up on the radio. I play this up everywhere. It helps people relax. Because I'm using that, well, it used to be a very self-deprecating term. When I started in radio, when I started in the business, people said, nerd, that's a derogatory term. Today, of course, we look up to people like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and so forth and so on. The list of nerds is very long, and there are very few people that are at the top of the world, the financial world, that aren't nerds. But that's another story for another day. So how do I fight loneliness? while working from home. It's an interesting thing because really there's loneliness at the office for a nerd. I will tell you, and I'll get into the part where I'm going to help you out. I will tell you that there is a certain level of loneliness whenever you are different from the crowd, whenever you are different in any form or fashion. Many people have experienced this. You take a jock who doesn't know anything about Star Trek. You throw him in a Star Trek convention, he is going to feel very alone. He's going to be surrounded by a bunch of nerds who are all dressed up like various members of the Starship Enterprise or Voyager or any of that. He's going to be very out of place. He's going to feel very alone. I'm a nerd. I actually fit in a lot of business environments because we really need nerds. But there's still a certain sense of loneliness that comes along with this. So I think I tackle loneliness a little bit better than a lot of other people. How do I avoid loneliness when I'm working? Not just from home, but working, period. Well, for starters, I reach out to people. I reach out in ways where I can put myself at service to them, where I can help them do their job better. I get accolades for that. I get, you know, all kinds of thanks and stuff like that. But that helps me develop a greater sense of self-worth, which is good. I also make sure that I reach out to them on a regular basis, all of these different people, and I check in with them. I also make sure that I'm doing a very, very much of that social aspect of it and making sure that I'm connecting with them. Now, I also have to make sure that I'm busy. I will tell you, one of the biggest things, one of the best ways to make sure that you are not focused on loneliness, that you're not focused on what is going on around you, is to ramp up your level of work. Oh, I know. Yeah, that's exactly what the boss says. That's how he gets us to work harder for him and to make him more money. But the reality is, let me pose something to you. You ever have one of those days? You went to an amazing amusement park, for instance, or you went and you did something absolutely fun out in the fields of whatever city state you are in. You went out to the park and the day just flew by quickly because there were so many things that you were doing and you were having so much fun and you were just overwhelmed with all of the amazement therein. I will tell you, there's so much to that. And it doesn't matter where you go and it doesn't matter what you do. It's a matter of you're filling time. So much of focusing on loneliness is when you can't fill that time. So much of feeling alone comes from when you are alone with your thoughts. And there's nothing else around to fill those thoughts. My mind normally goes 1,000,000 miles an hour. It just goes 2,000,000 miles an hour when I'm working because I'm doing a lot of different things. Lastly, I want to suggest that you reach out. You do the virtual water cooler. You make sure that you are reaching out to people that you're not working with, that are not working with you. You reach out to various people within the corporate structure, or maybe perhaps outside of the corporate structure. You make sure that you are reaching out and communicating and you're learning and you're just filling time with casual conversation. It gives you that coffee break, that chance to be around again, what I said, the virtual water cooler. I enjoy all of these different things. And I strongly suggest that if you're feeling lonely, find ways to attach to somebody else, to attach to something else, to fill your time. It really works well, I assure you. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Back when New York hosted three baseball teams, there were the New York Yankees, the New York Giants, and the beloved Brooklyn Dodgers, who were also known as the Brooklyn Bums. A most memorable season was 1955. I was in a bar watching the seventh game of the World Series between the Yankees and the Dodgers. I was an avid rooter for the Yankees. The Dodgers won the seventh game behind Johnny Padres, and they won the World Series. I had to quietly sneak out of the bar mid the explosion of emotional happiness, I guess. The Dodgers were close many times, but had never won a World Series. On the front page of the Daily News the next day, there was a cartoon of a face of a bum with a caption, "Who's a bum?" I had attended my first baseball game in 1947, so I have this attachment to baseball. But now, after a lengthy and often acrimonious negotiation process, Major League Baseball has set a plan for its return to the field, with players set to return to training camps today, July the 1st. The season will have its opening day on either July the 23rd or the 24th, and they'll play 60 games each, 102 fewer than the standard regular season, closing out on September the 27th, and then 10 teams would then compete in the playoffs, assuming there's no additional halts due to the coronavirus. Fans are not expected to be allowed at games during the shortened season. Indeed, even players who are not expected to participate in the day's game will be watching from the stands, sitting at least 6 feet apart. There are many other changes to play set for what will be an unprecedented season, played mostly in front of television cameras for fans at home. I guess this is what you would call a virtual baseball season. Spring training started today in the summer. Hey, take me out to the ball game.
Take me out to the ball game, sung by Edward Meeker, Edison Record. Casey, Casey was baseball mad, had the fever and had it bad, just to root for the hometown through every Sioux. Casey Blue. On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said, no, I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2, with but one inning more to play. And then, when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a pale-like silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought, if only Casey could get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a hoodoo, while the latter was a cake. So upon that stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust lifted and men saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled in the dell. It pounded on the mountain and recoiled upon the flat. For Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing, and a smile lit Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger to the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then, while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance flashed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said. From the benches, black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone on the stand. It's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the dun sphere flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two." "Fraud!" cried the maddened thousands, and echoed answer, "Fraud." But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The sneer has fled from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing and little children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
Wrong all along, good and strong. When the score was just 2-2, Katie Casey knew what to do. Just to cheer up the boys, she knew, she made the gang sing this song. "Take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game."
The song traditionally associated with baseball is "Take Me Out to the Ball Game." It was sung by Edward Meeker. It was originally recorded from the original Wax Cylinder in 1908 by Edison Records. In this virtual baseball season, you will see a game with many changes in rules for the season. In a Major League Baseball press release, the shortened season and a universal designator hitter in both the American and National League will take place for just this 1 year, 2020. Teams will open the season with a 30-man active roster. It will be reduced to 28 players after 2 weeks, then to 26 after 4 weeks. The trade deadline will be August the 31st. To be eligible for the postseason, a player must be added to the Major League roster by September the 15th. Teams will be permitted to carry up to 3 taxi squad players on the road during the season, though if a team carries 3 such players, one must be a catcher. During extra inning games in the regular season, each half inning will begin with a runner on second base. The batter who made the final out in the previous inning, or a pinch runner for that batter, would be that runner. There will be a 10-day injured list for both pitchers and hitters, though the 60-day injured list will be reduced to a 45-day list. They call this baseball? Well, I guess it's virtual baseball. Presenting Marty Winston with his All Hands on Tech segment. Water shakes, not stirred. Now there's a way to get great water without ever buying and lugging another bag of salt pellets.
Does your home have a water softener? How about your parents or grandparents? Well, how much do you, or they, how much do you enjoy lugging those big bags of salt pellets to wherever it is and dumping them in? Water softeners that use salt pellets or those that use brine or tanks of gaseous stuff, well, they're using chemistry to neutralize mostly the calcium and magnesium and in some places the iron. They do that before the water gets to where you wash with it or cook with it or drink with it. There's another legitimate way to make that happen using physics instead of chemistry. Or is it legitimate? Well, the answer is that, yeah, it can be. But there are a lot of charlatans out there pulling chintzy snake oil tricks to make a fast buck with things that make the same claims, but they do it for products that don't really do anything. In a way, it's a lot like selling fake purses or fake fashions. Several companies out there have been delivering good, solid performing products, and there's more than three decades of real results from real installations, leaving absolutely no doubt that using physics for water treatment really can work. Absolutely no question, which is to say, no legitimate question. But that's not what you see on the web, which is worth an explanation. No argument, there are a lot of bogus products out there that never could work. There are also a lot of strange test results that many times deliberately, because they're sponsored by chemical softening product companies, well, those so-called test results misinterpret what they see. Sometimes they do it just to fake you out. If you take a rake to all the web coverage of the topic, you'll find about 70% of the citations saying that physics cannot soften water, only chemistry can. But don't cast your vote just yet. It turns out not to be that complicated. Sure, you'll have to separate the legitimate makers from the sleazy fakers and the self-interest-fueled advantage takers. It won't take more than a few minutes to get you there. First, though, there's one more hurdle. Language. Even the long-standing, field-proven, legitimate product makers have a hard time explaining how their stuff works without their explanations sounding like a lot of fake science hooey. But it is real science based on things you know. Here's how physics can very effectively condition water that's shaken, not stirred. The physics, well, that's based on magnetism and its effects. And you're already thinking, of course, what in the world can a magnet do to water? It'll take a few minutes to connect all the dots, but one of the first is from that science class in maybe 6th or 8th grade where you saw that moving a wire through a magnetic field creates electricity. Well, let's generalize. Moving any conductor, a good one, a bad one, anything that isn't an insulator, moving any conductor through a magnetic field creates an electrical charge. Well, that's not quite creating electricity. You need a complete circuit for that. But it does create charges, even on water, which comes into play later. For now, think about all the things that are in the water. In fact, in your mind, shrink down to their level. Think of everything in the water that isn't water as a starship, meaning zillions of them. Each starship has electrical charges that act like tiny tractor beams on one end, tiny deflector arrays on the other. As you can imagine, that shakes things up. They don't get emotionally perturbed, but there is an activity called perturbation. Think of it as agitation, turbulence, vibration, churn. A black hole turning a quiet creek into a whitewater thrill ride. And it's all in water, right? You know that water is an almost universal solvent, meaning you can dissolve a long list of things within it. What makes dissolving so easy to do in water? Yeah, it's an electric effect. A stable H2O molecule has an innate electrical charge, positive on one end and negative on the other. That charge makes it ready for opposites to attract when something soluble is looking for a date with a water molecule. So there's all that shaking around of everything in the water that isn't water, and that's both breaking things up and pushing the smaller pieces together. Pushing the smaller pieces together, it's a lot like the ways that stars and planets form from gathering up stellar and cosmic dust. It's an aggregation. If the little here and there bits of calcium, for example, or magnesium were religious, you might call it congregation, all getting together. It builds conglomerations, but the term that most scientific analysis uses are coagulation, agglomeration, or flocculation. It has nothing to do with loose sheep all coming together into a flock, but you can think of it that way if you want. Anyway, be very glad there isn't a vocabulary quiz in the morning. Shaking everything up breaks it all up so it can reorganize. Using those electrical charges to pull themselves together, like stuff reorganizes into bigger clumps than were there before. That's bonding. And once those molecular bonds close, they're pretty happy for now. So, because of passing through the magnets, the stuff in the water shakes itself loose, rattles into its neighbors, and rolls downstream as bigger clumps than when it started. Shake, rattle, and roll. And that's the part that's going to make a lot of difference. Think about the reasons people use water softeners. Some of it may be to get better lather and suds out of soap. Part of it is to keep the pipes and shower heads from clogging up with scale. Scale, lime scale, it's a calcium compound. Did that clumping up just stop it from going away? Chemical water softening makes it go away. These magnets don't. So what's with that? Here's what. Those bigger clumps of calcium are, among other things, too big to collect on pipe walls. So they're not going to create new layers of lime scale. They're just going to keep rolling forward. In fact, they may grow a bit as they go because they're big enough to take some of the calcium from the lime scale that's already in the pipes along with them as they go. Yes, the pipes and shower heads and everything get slowly cleaned as this shaken, not stirred water goes by. But wait, doesn't that mean that a lot of calcium will be in the water that comes out? The water you use on your lawn and garden, the water you cook with, the water you drink? Well, yeah, it sure does. And that is very good news indeed for pipes, for plants, and for people. Especially people who like having stronger teeth and bones. Not to mention farmers and turf growers who are just fine with not buying calcium additives to supplement what's in the soil. Let the water put it there. By the way, that's where the people selling chemical softener systems are planting their flag. They say, just because just as much calcium reaches the point of use as is in the water initially, that softening hasn't happened. Well, literally, that's true. Softening hasn't happened, but conditioning has. You get all of the great suds and lather and all the clean pipes and shower heads that come with chemical softeners, but without buying chemicals or brine or using electricity. Somehow, they leave that part out. There's something else that's helpful, and it has a great nickname. The Moses effect. It happens when water passes through magnets. It's nothing you can magnify to part the Red Sea, but it's like that famous event. It's about changing the surface of the water and not just where it meets the air. You remember the term meniscus for the surface of the water as it meets the air and climbs a bit up the sides of a container? That little shape is the visible face of water's surface tension. This is the part that I promised would come later. Not just about things in the water, but about how the water itself, passing through the magnets, changes. The Moses effect. It lowers the water's surface tension, and that results in less friction between the outer edge of the water and the inner edge of the pipes. You may not notice much difference at home, but time after time, large-scale commercial and industrial sites that use magnetic treatment products to condition their water are reporting huge reductions in the power their pumps need to use to move it. There's one hard water item we haven't addressed, and that's iron. Magnetic treatments alone don't do enough to reduce iron to be considered a cure, but you still don't need to go to chemical treatments. There's tech out there that has both magnetic treatment, magnetic conditioning, and it integrates with traps that use both sand and filtering to make the iron not pass through. It's a wonderfully complete solution. Buy once and run for decades. Finally, if you're worried about microorganisms in the water, neither the magnetic treatment nor the chemical softening will make any difference, at least no significant difference. But like the air, you can disinfect the water with specialized UVC flow-through units that add quickly to your water line and plug into the wall for power. Next time, you'll hear about things happening in the air that sound a lot like what you just learned this time about things happening in the water, only using electrostatics instead of magnets. It's about products that give your HVAC filters some superpowers you'll recognize as especially helpful in a COVID-19 era. Also, like we just saw with water, it's another topic where we'll again need to separate the makers from the fakers as we cover charging air while dodging ozone. Feel like getting tingly?
Thank you, Marty. I gotta go back to my powder water from George Carlin. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and the Connecticut tri-state region. Some of the computer clubs have begun to schedule their general monthly meetings through teleconferencing. For updated information, visit the website of the computer club. The Westchester PC Users Group has a meeting on Thursday, July the 2nd, meeting time is 7 p.m., via Zoom virtual meeting. Presentation is SharePower. It's a free business programming language, and their website is wpcug.org, and visit their website to get more information to participate in the meeting. The New York Amateur Computer Club has a meeting on Thursday, July 9th. Meeting time is 7 p.m., and the presentation is WIX, W-I-X, via Zoom virtual meeting, and the website is nyacc.org. Visit the website for more information to join the teleconferencing. And the Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will begin their general meetings on Friday, September the 11th. Meeting time is 8 p.m., and they'll be meeting via Amazon Chime. For those who are not familiar with it, you should get yourself familiar with Chime at Amazon.com. And for more information on how to join the conference, the website for the Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey is acgnj.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the programs available on prn.fm on the Internet, as well as pcradioshow.org. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. Just to remember, wherever you are, we come together at 7 p.m. each day to give thanks and gratitude to the medical staff and essential workers. Ring a bell or make a joyful sound to show your appreciation for all those working on the front lines. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King, Michael Horowitz, Marty Winston, and Benjamin Rockwell, we thank you for listening and for your support. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.